Good morning. Welcome to November the 5th, episode 50 of Coffee with the Coder. So excited to have you all joining this morning. Thank you for supporting Coffee with the Coder and telling all your colleagues and friends. We have interesting technology going for us this morning. Hi, Paula.
Good morning. Good morning.
And on the day that Paula has the interesting technology, I'm traveling. So. So I'm going to just ask you if there's anything you'd like to share before I pop into the questions.
Well, no, I apologize for that. And I was actually reaching out and calling everybody on my team going, somebody get on the phone quick. So I'm sorry. We did get it worked out. So thank you. And probably Heather and Richard are here as well. But, Pam, we just probably should just jump in the questions. And then for those insiders, we will post a special on the website because we always give the insiders a special when they come in at 10 o'clock and we talk about, you know, what the specials are going on. So we're going to post it on the Facebook page for the insiders Facebook page. And you can join that. How, Pam?
I just explained how, but for those who just dialed in, there is a private Facebook page. It's called Coffee with the Coder. There's probably a public one that we reserved and don't put anything on, okay? But there's a private one, so when you go to join it, the price of admission is a selfie of you with something AQIQ in it. So you can draw it on a paper, you can put our website, or anything that you may have purchased from us works. And we call that a mugshot. So every episode, we draw a name from those non-anonymous people who have chosen to submit questions, and we have chosen those questions for today. Anyway, somebody's going to win a mug today. We call that a mugging. And so just to stand in line with that, we call it a mug shot when you have a picture. We've got all our mug shots all over the website and on the social media. So we'd like to see your mug shot, too. And so that's what that is. So now let me turn my attention over here to this question. And it's come from Chicago from Kim. And she's asking, is the FQHC paid by ICD-10 or CPT?
Okay, so yeah, FQHC is a federally qualified healthcare center. And basically, CMS established specific payment codes that FQHCs must use when submitting their claim. And those codes are HCPCS codes. There is a list of those codes. And actually, let me just describe to you real quick. FQHCs get a bundle payment based on the encounter that they have. And there is typically a G code that is used, which is a HCPCS code, not a CPT code, but they're both in the same family. CPT is a level of HCPCS. So that G code is reported. Now, some situations, there are extra services that would be reported with other HCPCS codes or CPT codes that would be paid outside that bundle rate, but the primary determination is usually a G code. ICD-10 codes are used to represent the medical necessity of the service, just like in any other encounter in the outpatient setting. So that said, you're typically looking at that G code. There's a list of those that you can find on the CMS website, and we will publish those with this version of our Coffee with a Coder. It's cms.gov/Medicare/Medicare-fee-for-service is a long, it's Medicare-fee-for-service-payment/FQHC-PPS/downloads/FQHC-PPS-specific-payment-codes-PDF. Now, I know I said that really fast, but there's actually another link that they have for frequently asked questions, which will probably answer a lot of your questions about the FQHC payment rate. And we will, again, post both of those links with the recording of today's Coffee with a Coder. So,
yes, we will. Thank you. And I appreciate having those in my little text document so I can post them. Now, this is an interesting question. Well, to me, they're all interesting. So I apologize if I didn't say that word when I said your question, okay? This comes from an inpatient rehab, and it's from Sarah, and it's kind of long. She says, when coding comorbidities versus complications, If the attending physician does not list a condition in the past medical history section of the H&P, for example, BPH or hypothyroidism, that the patient has been on medication for since the admission to the inpatient rehab, then several days later, a consulting physician lists it in their note as part of the past medical history. Is this coded as a comorbidity only or also as a complication? And then she gives some more detail. We've been coding this only as a comorbidity because even though the doctor didn't directly say it in their H&P, we were able to see the medication has been being taken the entire stay. However, if the physician does not include the medication list in their H&P, is that enough to go on? Do we need to have them explicitly state these conditions in their H&P? Our concern is if we're audited and we use the med list in our orders to inform us of a chronic condition, but the auditors don't have access to the med list, it could be construed as a complication even though we didn't list it as one.
And the question goes on. So let me go ahead and stop right there, Pam, and then we'll get back to the rest of the question. From a coding perspective, we are not allowed to use medications to determine a diagnosis. We're not allowed to use treatment. So we're not allowed to say, oh, the patient is on this medication, so therefore they must have hypertension or BPH or whatever. That is a medical decision that has to be made by the physician, so therefore we want that physician to document it in the medical record. If there's question about it, then, you know, a query would be appropriate. The med list, most of the time, auditors do have access to the med list, but they're not going to use that medication to determine a diagnosis. Now, let me back up a second, because in the inpatient rehab setting, you also have that pre-admission screen that the physician validates. And if your screener is doing a really good job, they're getting all those diagnoses in the pre-admission screen, even if the physician isn't stating them in the H&P. Don't shoot me here. Best practice is that the physician state them in the H&P, but if it is in the pre-admission screen and the physician signs off on it, that's very key because sometimes the physicians don't. He does his own. He or she does their own. But if the physician signs off on it, then that chronic condition is stated and it would be reported and supported by the fact that that medication was there. I always educate physicians to really document every condition that currently exists and associate the treatment to it. So, Pam, go ahead and finish that question.
Okay, she says, along those same lines, if the patient has one of those conditions that was not listed in the H&P, for example, hypothyroidism or BPH as an example, and a consulting physician is brought on board for another issue but makes adjustments to the medications for one of these conditions, and it is listed in their assessment, is it then coded as a complication since there was an adjustment of medication, like increasing their dose of Flomax for urinary retention or increasing their MCG dosage of Synthroid?
Well, here you go. Again, we are not going to code if the condition exists, it would be a comorbidity. So we're not going to code it as a complication. It's going to be a situation where you're going to query the physician if you're seeing treatment was there and the physician didn't state it. So I guess the bottom line answer to your question is we really want and heavily recommend that you direct your physicians to document those conditions that are being managed, that are affecting treatment, that are, you know, could be extending the length of stay or that is utilizing a resource as current and associating that treatment to it in the H&P or as soon as known in the medical record. If the physician, you know, we're all human, if he or she forgets to state it and then states it later in the record, you know, we would ask them to state the occurrence date or the recognition date or, you know, if the patient is not recognized with that BPH early on admission but the med is stated and then later even at discharge if the physician says, oh, the patient has a history of BPH, he needs to say since admission or prior to admission came in with this condition so that it's very clear of when it existed.
Okay, and what about if your main physician doesn't say it but your consulting physician does? Is that enough to go
okay.
on? Or?
Yeah, and if your main condition, well, in her situation it's a little bit different. If you have a diagnosis where your main physician doesn't address it, but your consulting physician does, and that's completely unrelated to any treatment at the beginning of the stay, then it's okay because you would list that one as a complication because there was no evidence that it existed before and it doesn't conflict with anything the attending physician says or your admitting physician says. That's okay. However, in this situation, I believe a query would be in line because it appeared that that condition did exist. I'd go back and check my pre-admission screen and see if your screener caught it, see if that screen was signed off by the physician or not. Either way, you're probably going to need your attending physician to answer the query. In some states, that query can't be part of the medical record, and in some it can. And so you need to know about your state. So if it can't, then that physician, attending physician, will need to do an addendum to the record. And that may be your protocol in your facility anyway. They may need to do an addendum.
Thank you. I've got an anonymous question. Before I can code a BMI that counts as a complication, Before I can code a BMI that counts as a CC, I still have to have correlating diagnosis such as obesity. Is that correct?
Okay, yeah. The CC is a complication or comorbidity. So you have that partially right, Pam. There you go.
Okay.
And yes, the answer is the physician needs to document how the BMI impacts the stay as well. Just because the BMI is documented doesn't mean we automatically report it if it has no relevance on the care. So there needs to be a disorder associated with the BMI.
Okay. Do I have time to go more? It's 22 after.
Yeah, let's do that since we were a little bit late starting. The previous question, Pam, is kind of ties into that one we were talking about earlier, so it might give a little more clarity.
Okay. Well, the next question is from Rick, and Rick says, please describe the differences between facility and trophy coding in the emergency department. How would you describe the significant differences?
Okay. Good question, Rick. So basically, the trophy is going to be based on the procedures and the services that the physician performs. So the reimbursement that is achieved is based on the physician's work. But the reimbursement that is achieved in the facility fee, that is for the resources that are used to treat the patient. So, for example, I know one of the questions is asked is evaluation and management services from the physician fee, pro fee perspective versus the ER facility fee. Now, the pro fee, it has set guidelines for what needs to be documented and used for the coding, which is a certain level of history, a certain level of exam, and a certain level of medical decision-making until that changes, and I think the new information is that's supposed to change in 2021. So, however, for the hospital, that E&M level can be based. There is no general rule that goes across all entities. The hospital, that level can be based on whatever guidelines the hospital creates. So it can be based on resource utilization. It can be on diagnosis. It can be based on procedures that are performed. But you got to be real careful on the facility side because you don't want to be double dipping. If it is a procedure that you would be reimbursed separately for or reporting another CPT code for, you wouldn't want to include it in your calculation method for the E&M level in the facility. So I hope that was helpful. That's real general to say it's, you know, you're looking at what the physician does versus what the supplies and the facility space that is utilized for that patient. That's the differences in those two fees.
Thank you. Do I have time for one more?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. The other one would kind of answered earlier.
So thank you for sending this in through our website, Sarah. This is another Sarah, and she also is in an inpatient rehab. If a patient comes in with essential hypertension after a stroke, but the H&P does not list the hypertension as labile, then a cardiac or neuro consult labels it that in a later progress note. Is this considered a complication, and what's the code for that?
Okay, so unfortunately, every question has its own nuances, which is why Coffee with a Coder is so great, you know. So basically what you said is that when the patient came in, they were stated to have essential hypertension following a stroke, and then but the H&P didn't list the hypertension as labile is what you're saying, but then later another physician, a consultant specialist, came in and said, oh, well, it's labile hypertension. Well, you got to go back and look at the coding and the definition of those two conditions. Essential hypertension is high blood pressure that doesn't have a known secondary cause. You know, basically, that's also called, there's primary hypertension, which 95% of the people with high blood pressure, the hypertension cause is unknown, and that is called essential or primary hypertension. But then if the cause is known, you're going to report it as secondary hypertension. However, labile hypertension simply means borderline hypertension. It's reported as elevated blood pressure. So your essential hypertension is reported with code I-10 and ICD-10. That was one of those easy ones to remember, unless the patient has kidney disease or heart disease or both, because then you're going to report a combination code. So that's where you got to know these coding nuances. You can't just say automatically hypertension is always I-10, because if there's some other conditions existing, it's going to be something different. But if the physician stated labile, that is really coded with a symptom. It's an elevated blood pressure reading, which is reported with code R03.0. So what these physicians are saying is two different things, right? And our coding rules tell us that the sheriff, or the one who determines the conflict, or determines the diagnosis if there's a conflict, is the attending. Now, in this situation, there's a conflict, and it would be appropriate to query the attending for the resolution of the conflict. You know, does the patient have hypertension, or do they not have hypertension? Now, in every occasion I could think of, if a patient has a diagnosis and the status changes while the patient's in the hospital, it would not be a complication on the IRFPI. I recommend using those present on admission rules for complications versus comorbidities, and that is, if a symptom exists at admission that leads to a diagnosis, it was considered present, or it is considered present on admission, and it would be a comorbidity rather than a complication. So it's like you have to look at each one of these elements, and basically with the two doctors saying two different things, even though one is the specialist, you need to go back and query the attending. Now, it's a little bit different in IRF because sometimes the attending is not the rehab physician. And there's a conflict in CMS guidance related to that, because in rehab, the rehab physician rules according to the guidelines from CMS. But our coding rules, and you might have a coder fight you on this if you're asking for the rehab physician if he's not the attending, but our coding rules say the attending leads. And you have challenges to that situation or those rules when you have a admitting doc who is not the rehab doc in an inpatient rehab facility. So there's some documentation challenges there. So, Pam, we went a little bit late, but I hope everybody stayed with us and got some really great questions. And, hey, guys, be sure to look out, because my passion is coming, is the Revenue Warriors group is about to open, and you guys will get special opportunities and special pricing on that. So to be a part of that awesome, awesome group.
Absolutely. So what I need to do now, besides remind you to call in 2 weeks, is figure out who's going to get mugged today. So I've got all the names on these little slips of paper in front of me. I've been twirling around where I can't see them. And the winner is Rick. Rick, thank you for sending in that question, Rick, and I'll be reaching out to find out where to send your mug. You probably won't get it in the mail today. I apologize. I'm traveling, so as soon as I get back in the actual office, I will mail it out to you. I would invite everyone on 2 weeks from today for episode 51. And also, keep checking on that Facebook page. Do invite yourself to be an insider by sending us your mugshot, and you'll be able to see all the insider information there. Thank you for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you on another event.